Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with the founders of the Humanize My Hoodie Project. We'll talk about how they're marking Black History Month with some unique new designs and the important work they're doing to educate and empower people who believe in social justice. But first, back when I was in high school, I read books by Charles Dickens, Ernest Hemingway, Geoffrey Chaucer, William Shakespeare. You probably did, too. Your parents' syllabus was probably very similar, and if you've got high school students today, they're probably reading a lot of the same books. Should students today be reading the same books in the same way? I'll talk with a couple of educators who think we need to ask some hard questions about that. But it's not a brand new conversation. The 1999 movie 10 Things I Hate About You was a modern interpretation of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, but a couple of the characters voiced their concerns about how we were teaching classic literature then and now.
Okay, then. What did everyone think of The Sun Also Rises?
I loved it. He's so romantic.
Romantic? Hemingway? He was an abusive alcoholic misogynist who squandered half his life hanging around Picasso trying to nail his leftovers.
As opposed to a bitter, self-righteous hag who has no friends?
Pipe down, Chachi!
I guess in this society, being male and an asshole makes you worthy of our time. What about Sylvia Plath, or Charlotte Bronte, or Simone de Beauvoir?
What did I miss?
The oppressive patriarchal values that dictate our education.
Good.
Hey!
Mr. Morgan, is there any chance we could get Kat to take her Midol before she comes to class?
Someday you're gonna get bitch slapped, and I'm not gonna do a thing to stop it. And Kat, I want to thank you for your point of view. I know how difficult it must be for you to overcome all those years of upper-middle-class suburban oppression. Must be tough. But the next time you storm the PTA, crusading for better lunch meat or whatever it is you white girls complain about, ask them why they can't buy a book written by a black man.
That's right, Mom!
Don't even get me started on you two.
Again, that's a clip from the movie 10 Things I Hate About You that came out 20 years ago, but not a lot has changed since then. Jeannie Dykes is an assistant professor of education at Iowa State University. She's been doing research about how we define classic literature and how we teach it, and she is here with us now. Hello, Jeannie.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I mentioned some of the books on my syllabus back in high school, and I know that sounds really familiar to a lot of people. How stagnant is one word to use, but I guess how has this remained the same over time? Give me an idea of how constant it has been.
Sure. So in the 1870s, English became a subject as we see it today. And during that time, 100% of the texts that students had to engage with in secondary settings were penned by British men. And in our most recent national study of what our high school students read across the country, our number one most frequently assigned author, I bet you can guess, Shakespeare. So not a lot has really changed despite some more multicultural perspectives being added. There's lots of scholarship that shows us that there is just this remarkable loyalty to these quote-unquote canonical traditional texts and perspectives. And so even though we do see titles like To Kill a Mockingbird and A Raisin in the Sun peeking through, there is this astounding stasis in terms of what high school students have been engaging with for over a century.
Now, I can imagine some people thinking right now, well, you need to read Shakespeare. It is foundational. It is, referenced in everything in our culture, in all these other great works of literature, in pop culture, everywhere. I mean, this is part of a classical education. What's wrong with that argument?
Sure. So people are often surprised when I tell them that I actually love Shakespeare. And it's not so much that there's a criticism of what Shakespeare has done and really is currently doing. It's more of a critical perspective and encouragement around why do we continue to teach these titles and these perspectives without ever questioning this tradition. So that's what a lot of my scholarship focuses on, is not necessarily engaging in a debate over who should be taught and where, but really giving teachers and students some of the tools to act with agency so that they can question in purposeful ways, hey, why do I never get to read a story about someone or written by an author who looks like me or who loves like me or who worships like me, where someone who sits beside me maybe entirely has his or her own identities reflected in those stories selected. So it's not so much on my end anyway, wanting to debate whether or not a particular author or text has value, but it's more about how can we create opportunities for teachers and students to be critical about the factors that have placed these certain texts in front of every single generation.
Before we really dig into how to do that, I do want to talk more about how we define classic literature, because during that clip, we heard a reference to The Sun Also Rises by Ernest Hemingway, also part of my high school curriculum. There clearly was a point at which this syllabus evolved to include writers from the early part of the 20th century, but it doesn't seem to have evolved very much beyond that. I mean, how do we define what's classic?
I think it completely depends on who you ask. So you think about our secondary English classes, and across the country, we typically have a required course on British lit and a required course on American lit and a course that kids take on world literature. So oftentimes kids have to sign up for an elective to be able to read about and discuss perspectives and stories written by authors and centering those perspectives of people who are more on the margins of our canonical conversation. So, you know, I think by and large, when I'm talking about this idea of quote unquote canonical perspectives, I'm mostly talking about British lit, because the way that we teach U.S. literature in our classrooms today cannot be untethered from our idea that being an educated American student actually has a lot to do with how much you can talk about Shakespeare. And that was as true in the 1870s as it is today.
So this is a leftover of colonialism.
I think you're onto something there. We should maybe write that article up.
All right. Well, you can work on that. And you actually spent some time in doing your research, spent some time in a high school classroom teaching students to think more critically about what they were reading. What was the subject matter when you were there?
Sure. So within our English classrooms, we do a lot of work getting kids to apply certain critical perspectives to a particular text. So we might talk about race with Mockingbird or gender with Romeo and Juliet. But what we did with this experience with two British lit classrooms, which were all seniors, is we took a step back and actually examined the discipline of English as a subject. So we looked at who and what group of people decided to even make literature something that we should teach in classrooms. So we started with the 1870s. Then we questioned who was involved in deciding our curriculum. We looked at national studies beginning in the early 1900s and going up to our most current study of what students in high school classrooms have been assigned to teach. We looked at Iowa Core, and we looked at Text Exemplars, which is a product of Iowa Core, which is this list of titles that are prescribed in terms of being quote unquote some of the greatest ones that students should be assigned. And so what we were really trying to do there was to not just focus on a particular text, but instead really investigate and question how our disciplines are political entities and how belief systems and people essentially are at the helm making these decisions about what kids read, what teachers have access to, and more broadly, whose stories matter in these required curricular spaces. So the point of this study and the work that I got to do with these teachers and with their students was to really get them to question and understand that everything that was happening in their classroom was fueled by belief systems of someone and through generational understandings of what kids ought to engage with and read in order to leave our U.S. high school settings, quote unquote, educated. So really getting them to deneutralize what to them seemed normal and something that they shouldn't question. And the kids would say things like, Shakespeare's boring and dull and I can't access it. But in the same breath, they would say, but I have to read it if I'm going to be prepared to go to college. So no one said that to them, but they've been socialized through various structures into understanding that I have to read these particular texts if I'm going to be taken seriously as someone who is educated.
Well, so, and I'm sure that's reinforced by the fact that when they get assigned a book, their parents say, oh, I read that.
Right, right. Absolutely. And it was just such a powerful experience because what we ended up coming to some conversation about was how this idea of canonical and traditional curriculum oftentimes is a proxy for white and oftentimes white and male. There was a few students, there's actually a quote in the study that was the product of this particular project where a student said, I just realized that everything I've ever had to read in high school was written by a white man. And maybe I would have never thought about that because I'm white, right? So we just sort of assume, particularly when certain texts and authors look like us, that that's normal. But that's a really different experience for kids who are on the margins of those identities. So really giving kids and teachers some tools and some space to question who is exactly honored and affirmed when we say traditional, and what types of students and perspectives have to take an elective English class in order to have their perspectives honored.
With the students, I can imagine that there was some excitement in responding to this idea that the prescribed path that they were taking was not necessarily the one that they should be pursuing or that they need to question it. But I can also imagine high school students saying to themselves, well, then I don't have to read this book that I don't want to read, which was not your point, right?
Don't they wish, right? Yeah, absolutely. So again, I saw this as an opportunity to take this body of research that I had discovered through my own scholarship and really share that out with students. So I'm sure they would have loved for us to just have said, let's just forget it. But they were more amendable to it than what you might expect.
All right. Well, we'll talk more in just a moment. This hour, we're rethinking high school lit classes. The syllabus for high school lit classes hasn't changed much for generations. I'm talking with Jeannie Dykes, an assistant professor of education at Iowa State University, who thinks we need to question how we teach classic works of literature. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, my conversation with the founders of the Humanize My Hoodie Project. We talked yesterday about how they're marking Black History Month and also the work they're doing to educate and empower people who believe in social justice. Right now, we're talking about high school lit classes. We're talking about the books that you were assigned when you were in high school, the books your parents were assigned, the books your kids were assigned or are assigned. They haven't changed much over the generations. And Jeannie Dykes is an assistant professor of education at Iowa State University who believes we need to question that, or at least how we're teaching these books, because that hasn't changed a whole lot over the years as well. I also want to bring Leanne Erickson into the conversation, an English teacher at Mount Vernon School District. She teaches the school's social justice and African-American literature courses. Hello, Leanne.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
And
I appreciate it.
Jeannie was mentioning how for teachers who want to broaden their students' horizons and not just teach books by white European men, which are predominant in the course syllabus for many of these classic lit classes, that, of course, they create electives, which is something that you've done. But I'm curious, I mean, do you feel like as a teacher, as an English teacher, do you feel very constrained by really what there is this expectation that students need to have read to go to college?
You know, I think that is something that has certainly changed over my years of experience in teaching. And I think there are a lot of factors that play into that. So I started teaching in New York City and Chicago, and in some urban public schools budgets are smaller. So typically one of the things that I think is most constraining is money. Do we have money to buy new things, or will we just continue to teach the things we have?
Right. We've had this set of books for the last 30 years, and we're going to keep assigning it every year.
Correct. Yes, absolutely, because new books for whole classes are really expensive. So that's part of it, and we can argue about why that money would be put to good use. But here at Mount Vernon, we do have more flexibility. I have a lot of creative license, if you will, to what I teach, and also our English students. After three semesters of core English work, their final five semesters of English are all electives. So we offer probably 15 elective English courses for students to choose from. So it's a completely different style of approaching the canon. But we are absolutely bound. You know, we were just talking about creating an AP literature course, and if you look on the AP list of recommended readings, it is not an incredibly diverse list, and those texts are referenced on the AP test, which students have to take. So there are a lot of areas that bind teachers, and I certainly, in some ways, was bound by this in my own schooling. But I think it's important to find ways to get around those ties.
I was thinking back. I spent a lot of time last night in preparation for this, trying to recreate my high school course syllabuses. Mm-hmm. I know that we did read Native Son by Richard Wright. So I know that I was assigned one book by an author of color. And I could only come up with one book by a woman that I was assigned. And my memory is not perfect, but we did read Ethan Frome by Edith Wharton. And to my recollection, the best of my recollection, that's the only book by a woman that was assigned. I mean, Jeannie, when we look at these lists, do we see as much gender conformity as we do racial conformity?
Sure. I mean, I don't think our secondary literature classrooms are very warm and inviting to women either. And I think that when you think about the different systems of identities, that becomes even more complex. So when we think about authors who identify in non-conforming gender ways, and when we think about authors who identify in non-traditional spaces in terms of their sexuality. So there's all sorts of different ways that we can think about who is and is not present on our high school curriculum list. I really love y'all's conversation earlier about why teachers select the text that they do. And we have scholarship that shows us that a lot of times teachers teach texts because they have access. So if they're in the book room, districts tell teachers what they have to teach. And then also a lot of times teachers feel like their worth as an English teacher in particular is bound to the works that they teach. So said a different way, I'm a great English teacher if I teach great literature. So really thinking about some of those more subtle influences that are ultimately some of the deciding factors in terms of why I pick to teach The Hate U Give versus Romeo and Juliet.
The this idea that literature needs to be old to be worth assigning in classrooms, do you feel like that is an idea that is still pretty predominant among teachers who may have a little more leeway with their syllabus?
I think it really just depends on the teacher who you're talking to. I know some great teachers who absolutely love teaching British lit, and they teach it in very traditional ways. And I know some great teachers who are into young adult literature, and they do a fantastic job with that. I think there's just more, perhaps, conversation that we should be having as parents and educators and people who are preparing teachers to really get our teachers to think about who is being affirmed in your classroom when you continue to turn to certain texts and authors year after year, because we're sending a very clear message to our students who don't identify as white, as male, as straight, as Christian, about who gets to matter in this class and where do you have to go in order to feel valued if you want to have an author or some characters who mirror your own sociocultural identities.
If I could jump in there for a moment, Charity, I think in addition, and I really appreciate, Jeannie, what you're saying, I think in addition we also are telling white students who matter as well.
Absolutely.
I am a white woman, and one of the things that I have really been trying to do, particularly in Mount Vernon, which is predominantly white, is to tell different stories, because I think one of the things that happens is we do send our white students also into the world with a very skewed perspective because of the voices that they're hearing from. If you look at Iowa education, 97.6% of all teachers in Iowa are white. So that's who our students are learning from. And so if we're not bringing multiple voices, multiple stories into the classroom, then it potentially is they're not getting those in their own lives, especially if we look at the way in which our communities are segregated. So I think it's really important to be educating our white students as well, to do what you were doing with your students in the secondary classroom, questioning the text, looking at historical context, asking themselves who's telling the story, but asking themselves what story am I telling in my life? Where are my implicit biases lying? How do I see those arise? And then how do I read literature through those bias lenses as well? So I think that's really important too.
Well, Leanne, I'd love to have your thoughts for individuals. I realize not all high school students are going to read with the same kind of attention that people who love to read do. But the act of reading so often becomes an act of empathizing because of how it fires your imagination, because of how you identify with the main character or the characters in the story and feel what they're feeling. And so part of the issue is that we are only empathizing, those of us who are our white readers, we're only empathizing with people who do reflect us. I mean, is that part of the gulf that you're trying to help your students cross?
Yes. And so then you ask yourself, where are the other stories about people of color, about refugee people, about, you know, you name it, where are those coming from? Are they coming from social media? Are they coming from your social circles, et cetera? So, I think that is a really good point. And I think if you can't go out and take students on in experiential learning, which I think is really important and I value highly, I think the second best thing you can do is give them the experience through literature. And so I think that is so valuable. And I think you can empathize with characters of all time periods. And I think sometimes when we think about old literature, we think about white men who are dead. You know, I think I heard of a class somewhere called Dead White Men in literature. But I do think it's important for us as educators to reimagine the canon. And when I say the canon, I mean, you know, that classic literature that has been taught and is held in this high regard. So to reimagine what that is, I would ask, is the slave narrative an important part of the canon? Is Toni Morrison an important part of the canon? I would say yes to those kinds of things, and to tell students that, you know, people of color didn't just start writing 10 years ago, but you just haven't had access to them.
Right. And so there are many authors from that period that we consider to be that classic period that have that broader perspective.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And how do we bring those in? I mean, you're right. We're stifled, as Jeannie was saying, by so many things. Cost. Also, we often teach what we read. Mm-hmm. And as I wasn't an English education major in undergrad school, I was an education major. So I had the opportunity to take some more English classes. But if I didn't, I probably would continue to teach the things that I was comfortable with, and I'd probably be most comfortable with the things that I was taught. And so to just examine that, to look at that critically and be able to say to myself as an educator, okay, well, how can I sharpen my own skills? How can I broaden my lens? How can I tell different stories? Because if we're only telling a single story, then unfortunately we're not giving our students the ability to go out in the world and be compassionate people for all people, and we're not really for all students when we're just telling a single story. And that can be applicable to any course.
I'm talking with Leanne Erickson, English teacher at Mount Vernon School District, and also Jeannie Dykes, assistant professor of education at Iowa State University. And Jeannie, I want to ask you, since you had these conversations with students, let's say you're a teacher who has that AP Lit course syllabus that you're locked into because you're preparing your students for the AP test, or you're a parent whose child is bringing home these same books you read in high school. What kind of conversations do you feel it's important for the teacher or the parent to facilitate to help your child think a little more broadly, even if they're reading the same stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I think one of the important and most wonderful features of being a teacher is this idea of pedagogy, which is just a fancy word for the ways in which we teach something. So I oftentimes see that people think that working for social justice is always curriculum bound. So I'm teaching this text by a person of color, check, now I'm socially just, when there's more nuance, I think, behind it. So I always talk to my teacher candidates and my grad students and the teachers who are practicing teachers, and we talk about how social justice is never inherent or inscribed to a particular text. You can take something like Macbeth, and you can, I've worked with teachers who have talked about police brutality within that particular context, and ambition in the Trump administration, and what does that look like thematically tied into what's happening with Macbeth, right? So there's all these different ways you can supplement if you're willing to see what you have to teach as a starting point and not necessarily this holy grail that kids have to understand every single piece of it in order to leave your classroom, quote unquote, educated. And then I would also add that what I have seen happen so many times is that most often people don't object to incorporating an author of color or a woman, but what they really have a hard time dealing with is when you also ask them to question tradition, right? So when you position your white students to really think about, hey, what's up with the fact that these traditional assigned texts are almost all white dudes, that's a lot of times when you get some pushback, because that has just been so completely normalized in terms of, well, we read that because that's just what we read. So even though both of those examples in terms of questioning the whiteness of our canonical curriculum and also bringing in perspectives of folks who are on the margins, both of those are ways of doing social justice work, they're oftentimes perceived very differently, and they're oftentimes responded to very differently.
Do you have anything you want to add to that, Leanne? Have you felt that kind of pushback from some of your students and some of your families?
I would say teaching a variety of texts, and as Jeannie was saying, being able to look at justice-driven, compassion-driven ideas, motives, even in other works of literature that we have been studying for a long time, has really been pushing my students to question their learning on all aspects. I think part of that comes from experience and the way in which you provide context and encourage students to ask questions. Recently, we took a civil rights trip through the South to talk about racial reconciliation, and they came back saying things like, I want to change the things that are taught in my history classes, in my literature classes, and because we really have ears that are listening here, they have a meeting with our superintendent to talk about things that we can do to make our curriculum better, richer, fuller, more representative of the world around us. So I think it's actually really motivated them to question the world around them. Absolutely, you know, looking even at Jeannie's article to talk about, I think it was a 27% increase in, you know, students understanding or questioning the world around them. That's absolutely happening when you bring in different perspectives and you ask students to analyze different stories. And then you also take them out and make connections to their own communities and their own lives. I feel like I want to build a compassionate learner. The only way to do that is for students to recognize, and for me personally, to recognize my own shortcomings, my own biases, and then to struggle through those. And we can struggle through them together with literature, with experiences.
Well, and Jeannie, in thinking about these conversations you've had with these students, I can imagine that in some ways questioning what they're reading and what they're being taught actually can deepen a student's connection to what they are reading. I mean, a lot of students sit bored through talking about Shakespeare, but in many ways, it sounds like these conversations make it more relevant, more alive.
Absolutely. And I think that any teacher who's really passionate about students and not necessarily just their content, but really privileging, interacting, and supporting students' growth, would also say that anytime that we can get our kids to be more excited about the curriculum that we're teaching them and alongside them, we definitely want to be able to do that. And I think one of the beauties of this, the critical approach to disciplinary understanding, is that kids want to have these conversations. Kids see that certain voices and perspectives matter more in their day-to-day lives. They experience it. So in a lot of ways, when they're in these educational spaces in which a teacher is bold enough to go there with them, I think a lot of them really feel empowered because now they actually have a space where they can actually learn some of the vocabulary in terms of understanding what is perspective, what is voice, what is marginalized, what is privilege, and what does it look like in English. And I love this idea about it's not just about English, right? It's about history. It's about math. Each of these different disciplines advance their own canonical curriculum in terms of knowledge that matters, right? And that's essential knowledge within this capacity. And I would also argue that kids want to have those opportunities to then apply those skills when they're thinking about their world around them.
Jeannie Dykes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jeannie Dykes, Assistant Professor of Education at Iowa State University. Leanne Erickson, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Leanne Erickson, an English teacher at Mount Vernon School District. We've been talking about rethinking high school lit courses. Coming up in just a moment, my conversation recorded yesterday with the founders of the Humanize My Hoodie Project. We'll talk about how they're marking Black History Month. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.